use some more for.
It will. Yeah. I mean,
we're going to open the Rules Committee today, and thank everybody for being here. Sorry we're a little bit late. The floor went a little longer than we anticipated. The last bill we thought was going to be a little shorter than it was. those things happen. So, with that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3473. And Representative can come up. We'll have a short explanation. And we do have the Dash 1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Matt Wingert, House District 26. Appreciate the committee's willingness to hear this bill earlier a constituent of mine, April Hill, has been very, very interested in. After speaking with the chair about what would perhaps simplify the bill and remove the fiscal impact, we came up with the gut and stuff amendments that you have in the Dash 1s, which is simply do three things. Require school districts, high schools that have a web page, to put a link on the front page of their website to the new online voter registration page that the Secretary of State is going to create. Secondly, just require them to make voting and voter registration materials supplied by the Secretary of State available. Usually that'll end up in the counseling center or somewhere around there. And then to ask the State Board of Education to incorporate into its essential learning skills voter registration skills, so that it hopefully will end up in a government class when this high school student takes government class. At some point during that class, how to fill out the voter registration form and how to register for voting to vote will be included. And with that, that's all the bill will do. And I hope it'll have your support.
Questions? I have a couple. The first one is the voter registration materials from the Secretary of State's office are free, and right. All they have to do is request them, and they come. Is that correct?
Right. The idea would be that the Secretary of State would probably mail these out in a packet to the schools, and then then the schools would make them available. So if they're made available to the school must display them, essentially.
And would it be sufficient enough to make access to those materials electronically? Would that be enough to say that if it's online, that we have the station available, and therefore they could have it online rather than having the paper copies?
Mr. Chair, I defer to the Secretary of State on item B. This was essentially what they were comfortable with. I think they actually have some materials that they would make available to schools, perhaps the paper forms themselves, but I think they actually had some kind of materials in addition to the actual voter registration form.
And the last question has to do with why we don't have a fiscal yet. Because if there's extensive rulemaking that has to be done, it creates cost.
Right. And
we have a requirement in the bill that the board put it into their essential skills.
Right.
They have skill number 7 already, which says demonstrate civic and community engagement. Is that enough? Or do you think they have to do another
I don't know. Mr. Chair, you and I talk about these exactly as they're worded, and I simply had them drafted up as we talked about. I'm certainly open to changing them, but
It's an issue, and from my perspective, the essential skills definitions do cover it enough that we really wouldn't have to do a new one. That would make it much less expensive, and it would probably have a better chance of making it through.
Duly noted.
Okay. So I actually do believe that that part of the civic engagement part would meet the requirement of doing that. So thank you.
And as for the fiscal, my office did deliver the
They need an answer to that question, other than because if they got a question different, that they had to go and rewrite the rules.
So you've seen the fiscal then?
They haven't got it because they don't want to ask that question.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, that would change the whole bill, because if they have to do a whole process to change the that part of the already adopted, it's a couple-year process, takes a long time, costs a lot of money to change the essential learning skills. So
maybe one way to word this is that the next time they go through the process,
might be a
to just include that in it so as not to increase
correct.
The
that
cost.
That would be easier, so... yes. Okay. Thank you. Is there any other discussions? I'm going to hold off because I want to make sure that I get these amendments exactly right. before I put him into the bill. I have every intention of moving this bill once we get this correct, and I thank our student for being here. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Thank you, and we'll get back together on that one. So with that, I'm going to close our hearing on House Bill 3473, and thank you very much. And April, thanks for being here, and we will make sure that this work moves on. I think it's a good idea, so thank you for your work and your project. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 734. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Senate Bill 734 requires certain health insurers to cover tobacco use cessation programs. And smoking is described as the leading preventable cause of death in the United States. And it says that smokers who quit will live longer and have fewer years living with a disability on average than if they continue to smoke. Smoking cessation treatments are varied and may include medication, education, and counseling. Tobacco use cessation treatment is considered the single most cost-effective preventative health care that a person can obtain. Senate Bill 734 requires health insurers to provide payment coverage or reimbursement of at least $500 for tobacco use cessation programs for persons aged 15 years or older. Qualifying programs to be recommended by a physician who follows the United States Public Health Service guidelines and must include both education and medical treatment components designed to help a person overcome an addiction to nicotine.
We did have three amendments proposed. I personally would rather just move the bill as it is. So if I got that motion, Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be happy to support the bill moving as it is, and I've appreciated the emails and letters that we've received today urging us to do so. However, sometimes I think it's important to put on the record when advocacy isn't as effective as it can be, and I was disappointed to receive a letter from the American Cancer Society referring to Representative Maurer's amendments as absurd. And I would just recommend that in the future, that while I happen to support this, so I will, that I would advise respectful discourse even when there's a disagreement about the type of things that we do, and I hope that the American Cancer Society hears that message.
I appreciate that. Representative Girard.
I thank you for not moving the amendments, Mr. Chair, and I would congratulate the American Cancer Society for their keen observation.
Mr. Chair, are you sure you want to get rid of, let go of this great relating clause?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 734 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves Senate Bill 734 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelter?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boehner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Rowland?
Aye. Motion passes. Carrier, is there anyone that...
I'll carry now.
Representative Girard.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The smoker's car.
So we're going to close our work session on Senate Bill 734.
Yesterday, I never would have thought I'd have carried that bill.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I also really liked it yesterday when Representative Girard said I was right. I wrote that down in my personal journal.
Get used to it. So let's open a work session on House Bill 3237. I'll have a short explanation. I think we have an amendment for that.
We do. Should have several.
Yeah.
Okay. House Bill 3237 provides that election ballots list the names of all political parties that have nominated candidates for elections, requires Secretary of State to include the statement in voter pamphlets regarding nominating process. This bill has effectively been replaced by a series of amendments, potential amendments. You should have Amendment 5 and Amendment 6 as the latest ones. Amendment 5 replaces the Dash 3 amendments, in my understanding, and Amendment 6 replaces the Dash 4 amendments. The Dash 5 amendments differ from the proposed Dash 3 in the following way. They revert the current law for the number of voters in a precinct back to 5,000 and reverts the current law regarding ballot envelope language when a ballot has both a tax increase and a tax renewal, and adds a prospective petition to the witnessing process. The proposed Dash 6 amendments replace the Dash 4 amendments with the same qualifier that House Bill 2005 must become law to affect those amendments. The Dash 6 amendments, along with amending ORS 250.048, amends ORS 260.561 to state that a chief petitioner may not be held criminally liable for a violation committed by a person obtaining signatures on their behalf. It also amends ORS 260.563 to state that a contractor may not be held criminally liable based on a violation committed by a subcontractor on their behalf.
Okay. Yes. So we'll let our Secretary of State, Kate Brown. Just some clarification of our amendments, and so we get which ones are the ones we really want to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Kate Brown, Oregon Secretary of State. To my right, Legislative Counsel, to answer any questions. I'm asking you to support the Dash 6 amendments, which will amend House Bill 2005 in two ways. First, it incorporates the Dash 4 amendments that Mr. Day testified to on Friday, May 31st. Mr. Watson thoroughly explained that amendment. It also amends Section 5 and Section 6 of House Bill 2005 to clarify our intent that there needs to be independent evidence to hold chief petitioners and contractors criminally liable for the criminal acts of their signature gatherers. One example I can give you is that if a contractor were to direct their employees to change the dates and names of the folks who signed the signature sheet and the employees did so, arguably violate ORS 260.567. I think that's a really good example of what we're looking at. My understanding is that there is fairly solid agreement on this amendment. I would urge and I vote on it, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions about this amendment and how it works? Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry, Madam Secretary. We are already amending 2005.
That's correct.
Is that kind of what I'm getting here?
Mr. Chair,
because there was problems with the, if I could continue, because there were problems with the language around the liability of the chief petitioners.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, the answer to your question in brief is yes. But I think what I would say is we're comfortable with the law as written. I think everyone would be more comfortable with these changes.
As would I, and I appreciate you coming forward.
Further questions of these witnesses?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, that being said, I would entertain a motion for the Dash 6 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the Dash 6 amendment stated 6309 in House Bill 3237.
Representative Edwards moves the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill. Get back to the right one. Senate Bill. Thank you. House Bill 3237. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Yeah. So ordered. Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3237 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
We have a fiscal reason for Dash 6. We don't have one.
Do we need the dash fives as well?
No, I think it totally doesn't.
We don't have the.
Mr.
Chair, I will remove, withdraw my motion.
We don't have the RZR FIS on the newest amendment, so we just put in, so we have to wait anyway.
The only amendment we put in was the dash six.
That's right.
Yeah.
The only amendment that we put in
is the dash six.
The only amendment that I voted on was
there we
the
go.
Dash six.
That's right.
Yes.
There
Thank
we go.
You.
That's true. And we took it off because we don't have the RZR FIS on that one, so we're going to close our work session.
Thank you.
On House Bill
37.
Thank you. Yes. And we will move the work session to tomorrow.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll have raising business on this. Thank you very much. We're going to move, since our representative is here, to House Bill 3484. We're opening a public hearing on 3484. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator, and we do have some amendments.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3484 establishes operating standards and conduct and standard of conduct for exchange facilitators. It defines key terms, requires exchange facilitators to provide notice of change in control and specific notice requirements, requires exchange facilitators to maintain certain assets at set minimum amounts or insurance at a set minimum amount at all times, specifies requirements for same. Requires exchange facilitators to maintain errors and omissions insurance and set assets at set minimum amounts at all times and specifies requirements for same. It requires exchange facilitators to act as custodians of exchange funds and directs investment of exchange funds only if certain criteria are met, specifies those criteria and limitations, protects exchange funds from claims against the exchange facilitator, and protect certain conduct by exchange facilitator. The dash one amendment that you have expands the definition of client to include all taxpayers, not just state residents, removes from the definition of exchange facilitators those who publicly represent or advertise such services, excludes from the definition of exchange facilitators certain exchange accommodation title holders, exempts exchange facilitators from notice requirements under specified conditions, changes the reference from agreement to accommodation agreement as appropriate throughout, adds a 12-month time frame to the criteria to determine change in control, removes the requirement for exchange facilitator to maintain sufficient liquidity or preserve principal, and narrows prohibitions against misrepresentation to only those misrepresentations that are knowing and material. As you are aware from our previous hearings on this matter, exchange facilitators are most commonly used in real property transactions to hold funds that would otherwise be subject to certain tax consequences.
And with that, we have a panel. Nice to see you again. So make sure and identify yourselves, and Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Escobar, Representative District 6. To refresh everyone's memory, a 1031, which is an IRC 1031 exchange, is when you, as a principal, sell a piece of property, and if you touch any of that monies from the proceeds of that property, then you immediately pay taxes on that on a capital gains basis. Whereas if you use and put it in the hands of a facilitator, then at that point you have 45 days to identify different properties to purchase and 180 days to consummate that transaction. And the facilitator is the one that moves the money from point A to point B to actually point C, because point B would be the facilitator themselves. This way you don't get away with not paying taxes, but you do defer those taxes until a later date. That's what it amounts to. Now, having said that, we have had some interesting things in the past here where we found out facilitators are not governed. We've had some facilitators that have taken the monies from the principals and invested it in either and or companies or other places and lost that money. So we're putting some sideboards on this to protect the public. This is seems like a very complex bill, but it really isn't. What we're going to do is make sure that the public is protected, make sure that there's a bonding facility, bonding ability for us to go after someone, and this is something that the public needs to be protected from. I'm going to give you a couple of examples. I believe we had one particular case here in Central Oregon, I think it was, where an individual purchased a company, a facilitation company, and I believe lost over $10 million in that venture. Wasn't that pretty close?
Pretty close.
Yeah.
What happened is they invested.
You have to identify yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Jay Dobson. I'm with First American Exchange. We're a qualified intermediary, and our office is located in Portland. And in that particular instance, the facilitator company invested the funds with their own companies in real estate contracts, and the values of the property, real estate mortgages, and the values of the properties went down, and the property was not adequately secured, and a great deal of money was lost.
Nationwide, we've had a company that's lost over $200 million with the same shenanigans. So therefore, we in Oregon would like to protect our consumers and protect our investors with sideboards in order for us to have an ability to monitor, to make specific criteria for these facilitators and exchange companies. So that's why we're here today. Unfortunately, it's after the fact, but that's usually the way you learn about problems, is after the problem has happened.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alan Brickley. I'm with First American Title Insurance Company in Portland, Oregon. The bill that you were introduced to you earlier was a model bill, if I could call it that, one that's similar to one that's been introduced in other states. Since that time, we've had some conversations with affected or interested individuals, and they have resulted in the Dash 1 amendments. Mr. Dobson is also here to explain, if you wish, the amendments or to answer any questions about the amendments.
And just one further part so you'll understand. This bill, as introduced, is the same bill that was adopted in California last fall. The amendments are things that were unforeseen when the bill was originally adopted, but trying to clarify some of the provisions. I believe a very similar version of this bill was also recently adopted in Colorado.
Okay. Questions? Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sal, you can maybe answer this for me. Didn't they used to just put this kind of money into escrow and so that nobody, neither side could touch the monies? Can you give me a definition of what, or an example of a facilitator?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, we don't want to get those. They're kind of the same, but they're different. And I know that's a great answer, isn't it?
In fact, I'm a real estate guy.
But they are actually escrow people, but the facilitation part is separate from just an escrow that you go purchase a house. It's a different situation. You have different rulings from the federal government on the taxation part, and you actually hire a facilitator. You do not actually hire an escrow officer. There is an escrow officer involved, but you do have a facilitator that handles all the money separately.
By way of clarification, one of the common misassumptions was that if escrow was handling the fund and the taxpayer wasn't getting their hands on it because it was an escrow, that was sufficient way to separate the taxpayer from the funds. Unfortunately, escrow is deemed to be an agent of the principals, and so if escrow is holding the money, they are basically got constructive receipt of the funds. So just having escrow hold the money will not protect the taxpayer. It's got to be held by a third party who qualifies under the IRS as a qualified intermediary.
Thank you.
Any further questions of these witnesses? Seeing none, thank you very much. We're going to close our... Is there anyone else? There was no one else signed up. Is there anyone else that was so excited after hearing this information wanted to come and testify? I see none. I'll
tell you what, if they're going to do a 1031 exchange, they should be.
We're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 3484. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3484. We have the amendment, we have the fiscal and this on all of it. We have everything we need for this bill. So, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 3484.
Representative Berger moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 3484. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. There is no discussion. Okay. Is there any one who is opposed to the -1 amendments? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3484 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 3484 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? I guess the only thing I'd say is, you learn something new in this committee all the time. I didn't even know this was out there and that there was no regulation. It's just remarkable to me that it's been around and done this. So,
Mr. Chair, I recommend Representative Esquivel gets to carry this.
Okay, we can do that too. So, with that, we'll have a roll call vote. Roll call vote.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. Motion passes, and we will have Representative Esquivel carry this bill. Just so people know, House Bill 2932, we have a public hearing on. We're going to carry that over to tomorrow. And just so other people know, in 5 minutes, I lose two more of my committee members. Three more of my committee members. So we're going to... the only one I know is 3495.
We have everything.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3495. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. Members of the committee, House Bill 3495 permits reimbursement of actual and necessary travel and other expenses incurred by members of the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Committee. Specifies members will be paid out of funds appropriated to Portland State University for the purposes of the committee. Applies to expenses incurred on or after the effective date of the act. I believe there is no amendment. We have a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm a member of your House and serve out of the Albany area. Representative Gelser and Representative Berger signed on to this bill originally, which was House Bill 2659, and just kind of a little bit of a mishap occurred, and time ran out, and it didn't happen anyways through the Judiciary Committee, and it was on its way to go. It had already been heard, so I used a priority bill, and this is what you have in front of you now, exactly the same language that both of you signed on to. But what this does, it comes to you at the request of Benton County Commissioner Annabelle Aramillo, who serves as the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Committee, LECC. For your information, the LECC was established by the Oregon Legislature in 2001 to receive and analyze demographic data to ensure that law enforcement agencies perform their missions without inequitable or unlawful discrimination based on race, color, or a national origin. Now, I'm not going to read those bullet points because you have my written testimony in front of you and everything, but I do want to close here that ORS 131906 prohibits citizen appointees from being reimbursed for their travel or other expenses directly related to their voluntary services on the LECC. And all this bill does is it allows, it is permissive and allows for those members who serve on this committee or commission to be able to retrieve reimbursement for mileage and overnight stay should those funds exist. So, that's essentially what this bill does.
Questions? questions? Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Andy, how far do these people have to travel?
Well, there's...
We're not talking to Hawaii or anything.
No, they're all residents here in Oregon. And I don't know specifically the farthest traveled, but I do believe there is one that lives, that's a resident over in Pendleton.
Question, Representative Edwards.
Sorry,
and,
Mr. Chair.
And the meetings are in Oregon.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Berger.
And so we get it on the record. It is only reimbursement for their expenses to and from these meetings. It is not any kind of reimbursement for their time spent at the meeting. They are
Mr.
volunteers.
Chair, Representative Berger, that's correct.
Other questions for these witnesses? Representative Edwards.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. How does, so it's permissive for the, I mean, who makes that decision if it's permissive? And it, are all members treated equally on the LECC, or is it just for people that apply, or I'm not, given that it's permissive, I'm just wondering exactly how that works, the mechanism.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Edwards, the language in the bill itself is written as may, and so it creates it permissive, but the issue is that from listening to the County Commissioner, Annabelle Romero, on it, she believes that a lot of the folks, because of their close proximity and residency here in the Valley, probably would never submit reimbursement claims for per diem, that type of thing, for this, and it would just be more or less for those that are, you know, of distance.
Representative Berger.
You don't mean per diem, you mean expense.
Excuse me. Thank
you. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And this is totally funded through Portland State in a grant situation. It's not state funds, actually, that would actually be used. Is that correct? It could be in the future, but...
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions for this witness?
We do. If you...
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this bill? I didn't see anybody else signed up. Then we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 3495, and I'll open a work session on 3495. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3495 to the floor with a do adopt.
Or do pass.
A do pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 3495 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Could I speak to my
yes.
motion? Yeah, I am persuaded that this is a very narrow focus to help some people do their civic duty, and it permits reimbursement, which we should give to folks who are volunteering and sometimes don't because of statutory limitations, and this is very narrow. It doesn't have any impact on our general fund, and will help facilitate people being active in this, and appreciate Representative Olson's willingness to burn his priority bill on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Edwards.
Oh, and I just wanted to confirm that it doesn't have any general fund. That's not
general fund.
And because of that, I can support this. I mean, there are a bazillion commissions out there.
Yeah.
Usually get it reimbursed.
Usually get per diem. Usually they get per diem.
Well, or
not
expense.
Per diem. Usually they get expenses.
Yeah.
They get travel in particular.
One that I'm involved with doesn't. So.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up now.
I do appreciate the permissiveness of this
awesome.
Bill, and I also, being a person who lives in a little farther away from Salem than many, I appreciate the fact that they realize that if they want people to commit to these programs and to have an influence and to be a part of them, and they live 200 and 300 miles away from where the event's going to happen, not having the ability to reimburse for mileage really makes it difficult for those people. They're already going to put in an extra 4, 5, 6 hours on the road each way that they have to commit to this in their volunteering, and to not then get at least the reimbursement for the mileage makes it very difficult for them to volunteer. And I really do believe that the best commissions engage Oregonians from all over the state, so I appreciate the bill as well. So, further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. Motion passes, and we'll have Representative Olson carry. So we will close our work session on House Bill 3495. 3495. Thank you. We'd already closed the 84 one. And we're going to lose our revenue people, which is very different. We usually lose our ways and means people. So there's just a few of us, but we will open a public hearing because I want to get on the record some information. So a public hearing on Senate Bill 796A. And we'll have a short explanation by our administrator.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Senate Bill 796A requires death care consultants to be licensed by the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board and requires facilities for final disposition of human remains other than cemeteries and crematoriums to obtain certificates of authority from the board, expands the definition of cemetery to include scattering gardens and cenotaphs, and imposes requirements relating to burials on private lands, directs the board to establish rules promoting environmentally sound death care practices, and requires funeral service practitioners to dispose of unclaimed remains of indigent deceased persons in an environmentally sound manner. The proposed Dash 4 amendments clarify the definitions of cenotaph, and other clarifying language in the A engrossed measure. The proposed Dash 5 amendment deletes the term death care consultant and licenses and licensing and operating rules relating to that term from the A engrossed bill. There is a Dash 6 amendment, which I have just received. We have not had an opportunity to order a fizz-riz on it at all. That is my understanding, replaces the Dash 4 amendment and addresses some clarification of who would be covered.
Okay. And with that, we have Mark Steen. And I'm actually, yes. Our director as well, because I have some questions that I wanted to ask.
Have you seen my map, by the way?
There it
is. And with that, Mark, I'll let you go first. And be sure to identify yourself if you'd like.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. For the record, Mark Steen with the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. I am a funeral director and embalmer in this state, have been for 22 years. In addition, I'm the executive director for our association. We're here today to support the Dash 6 amendments that I think you just received.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess what I will ask the questions. I was very concerned when I saw the bill yesterday and was reading it and talked with a couple other people regarding the issue that, as I read it, you could have taken over regulating lawyers that drew up wills, ministers who performed services, and others, because it was the definition of this death care consultant was so broad, it didn't allow for me to understand how I would not include all those people as people that had something to do with the death care consultant issue. And so can you go through the amendments and explain how it would change that so that people would understand clearly that this kind of limits who the people are that we're talking about?
Yes, for the record, Michelle Gaines, Executive Director with the Mortuary and Cemetery Board. I just apologize. I'm just looking for my copy of the Dash 6 amendment. The the clarification, I think one of the it's a good question. The intent of this was never to limit or to apply very broadly, and it is something that I think in the Dash 6, what it does is it incorporates the content of the Dash 4s, which were the correction that came out of the work group and input from the public testimony process. The one change in the Dash 6 is it adds the clause about consultations directly related to the performance of funeral services or final disposition services. And what it's trying to do is really limit it that we're talking about the consultations that have to do with the what is often described as the at need, but that consultation about how do you do a do-it-yourself or a home funeral service, how do you act as your own funeral service practitioner, and target that. So it is the it is separate from the funeral service practitioner or embalmer, but it is not intended to encompass or incorporate ministers or celebrants or lawyers or pre-need insurance sales folks or any of those operations that might provide information or incidental advice on those things that are related to death.
Okay. In your opinion, since this is the group that's going to actually have to implement this law, is it still clear enough, or are you going to continue to have... I'm not sure. I read it, and I directly relating to the performance of... I still worry. Some of the wills get very directive that people are writing these days with respect to how they're going to go carry out the wishes of that person. And so... It still makes me a little nervous that we are including some of those people. And if they decided, if one of their people came to them and said, you know, I've heard about, and their attorney, I've heard about services offered because I really don't want to have this or this happen to me. And they say, well, we can write stuff in. I've looked at the law. Are they getting outside of their scope of being an attorney if they just try to explain to them what they could do as a individual?
Chair Roblin, that is not the intent, and I am more than comfortable going on record saying that as the board, it wouldn't be something that we would pursue. We would look to try to clarify through rule and through consumer education about what this is targeted at. It really is targeted at individuals that are providing, that want to go into the business and charge for their services to advise an individual on how to perform or to act as a funeral service practitioner or advise them on how to care for the remains or what their options are relating to final disposition. It really is targeted just at that segment, and that's what we would carry forward.
Okay. And this is just me. As we've watched this bill develop, it has become clear to me that because of the press that's come out about this, we got offered an article from the Emerald. We had other kinds of stuff. So this is kind of welled up in our communities more about it. That it really concerns me that there are people out there who are not as scrupulous as some of the people who came here yesterday and want to do the right thing, who would look at this as an opportunity to go take advantage of people. That does bother me. Therefore, I am convinced personally that we're going to need to do some kind of regulating and whatever. But I don't want it to be the kind of regulating that comes down and squelches a new activity. And so, in fact, I would like it to be a board that helps appropriate people do the right kinds of things. So, and develop a system that can work and still have available to consumers these options if they want, but through people who we feel pretty credible about. So I guess what I want to hear is that's the purpose of the board, because I think that at some point these people need to be represented on the board, other kinds of things need to happen. If they're going to be regulated, all the other people who are regulated seem to have a place at the table, and I would hope that you're open to that kind of stuff in the future. I don't see it in this bill. But
Chair Roblin, I think you put that just brilliantly. I absolutely concur that the intent of the board is consumer protection. It's to ensure the public health, safety, and welfare of consumers with regard to death care. The board is not a byproduct of the funeral directors or the funeral industry, as was referenced. Mark, even though he's sitting next to me, is one of representative of one of the groups of licensure. There are a couple of licenses on our board already. Our board members in our public general sessions have discussed that we need to, in our next legislative planning session, particularly if this bill passes, there will be new categories, including death care consultants, that we will need to ensure have the representation on the board. We're also establishing an advisory committee to put in place broader input for death care in Oregon. One of our strategic objectives is death perception, if you'll forgive the pun, but people don't like to think about death. They don't like to talk about it. They do more planning, frankly, sometimes for what they want to have for dinner than what they want to have for their final arrangements. We think the education is good. The board feels that consumer choice, Oregon demographic is changing. We need more options at all ends of the spectrum, low cost, high cost, green, decadent, from different practices, and that's what we want to represent. And I think the emerging practices that you see are part of that, and that's what the board wants to represent. We just want to make sure that if somebody's going to go into the business, the reason we have the regulation is to protect what is really a vulnerable time, and I think we saw some of that yesterday as well. It is very important. It can be very sacred for people, and we want to ensure that people have service practitioners they can go to and they know there's a standard of practice.
And I guess the other thing for me, yesterday was a unique experience in that I really didn't know that there were cornstarch caskets or that there were, and the idea of dry ice as a preserving agent for a short period of time makes sense to me. I mean, every one of the processes I heard had made some sense. It's just I hadn't thought about it. So I agree with you that education is an important aspect of what we're going to do. And I guess we heard a lot of testimony yesterday. We got there very late, and I just figured we should also give you an opportunity, if there's anything that was said that you would like to put on the record as, or yourself, because there were a couple of people who were, said some things about you in particular, and I thought it would be worthwhile having you the opportunity to give us a comment to any of those things that you want to speak to as well.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. I will keep it fairly concise. I think that it's fair to say that this has been a very contentious issue, and there is a lot of passion, a lot of heartfelt concerns, and I appreciate all of those. Not all of the meetings that I've had have been very constructive, that's true, but I am committed to working with the individuals in a constructive manner, irrespective of the bill, and I feel fairly comfortable that the individuals that are here today could speak to that. A couple of other things that I think would be worth clarifying just a little bit is that there was some overlap between the funeral service or the funeral practice and then the final disposition. The one thing I'd like to clarify is that they are speaking to two different things. There is the funeral service, which is the celebration or the care. The final disposition is really what happens to the body. Yesterday we were hearing some things about, particularly when it moved over into green burial. I just want to point out that there is a distinction between the two, and there is that greater complexity in death care, not just the funeral side of it, but whether it's the cemetery or the crematory or some of the emerging dispositions that this bill addresses, that there are all of those different aspects, so that home funeral or green funeral or cornstarch coffins, they can be lower cost, they could also be higher cost. They could be green, they may not be. I mean, there's so much variability. That is part of why one of the things in this bill, it's not for the board to set environmental standards. That's not our role. I wouldn't want to get in there. What it does is it says rules, we would adopt rules to promote environmentally sustainable death care practices. So what we would do, frankly, and I've already had some conversations with the tribes or with DEQ, there are many claims right now, and we are already seeing folks in their advertising, they're calling everything green. What we want to do is make sure that if they're going to make these claims, they reference that. A burial could be more green, but if you're importing a casket air freight from Britain, there is a carbon footprint impact that needs to be factored into the equation. So, we want to make sure the consumer has access to the education. I think that would be another piece. I think the last piece on it, and this has to do with the cost. The National Funeral Directors Association, there's made reference to the average $7,000 cost of a funeral. A couple of things there. That's actually the national median price. When you look at Oregon, the median is closer to $5,000, and I actually may defer to Mark on that. My point is, what we've seen is that these death care consultants have listed prices of $1,500 or $2,100 on average. That's what's been submitted in testimony. Of course, many of the folks don't charge, and they wouldn't be covered anyway. But there is data that says in the Pacific Northwest region that you can get a funeral from a funeral service practitioner in a funeral home for equivalent services for under the $1,500. So it should definitely be an alternative. I think they bring a lot to the death care community overall, but I just wanted to correct that it's not necessarily the lowest cost option, and I wouldn't want that to be a deciding factor for a consumer.
Okay. Other questions for these witnesses? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Give me some sort of an idea of the staff level of the board and just the overall budget of the board. And the reason I ask is because I think that there was reference yesterday in committee about some of the folks that are proposing to be regulated or opposing being regulated by the board would potentially want their own board. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if you do the math and how many people it takes to run the board, maybe it's only one. I don't know. I don't recall what the budget looks like, and you divide that by the number of death care consultants. I'm using that language because although they don't like that language, I don't know what else to call them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may be really cost prohibitive to have their own board. I don't know. What your perspective?
Chair Roblin, Representative Edwards, my sense of it is that part of the concern about the board and our oversight of it, we do have in next biennium, we have six budgeted positions. It's about $1.5 million for the biennium, and that covers the licensing operation, but also we're required by statute to inspect facilities related to death care. The I think the concern comes from a history or some practitioners, and this concern that there is that the board is synonymous with funeral practice that is only interested in one kind of way. It's interested in a certain profit. The board isn't that. We are a state agency. We do have four public members. Of the seven practitioners, two have to be public servants, have to be either municipal or special district cemetery representatives. And again, if we have additional licensure positions, we do absolutely believe that there should be representation. Because there are so many changes and there are actually a couple of licensees that aren't represented now, we have a board of 11 members. We don't want it to get much bigger, so we need to look at how do we get the representation within the numbers that we have. I don't really want to reduce the number of public members, so that's part of what we're noodling on and intend to move forward in the next session to make sure there is the representation. We don't expect to have a current board opening before the next session, and I believe that this bill goes into effect in March of 2010, so we are hoping to get something in the interim session so it can be considered at about the same time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
And I do appreciate coming back today and being here. We have the amendments. I think with your testimony, I feel more comfortable that you're not going to try to go out and catch all the ministers and lawyers that
no, sir.
Do death
and,
care.
And again,
so I feel good about that. That we don't have the fiscal or the revenue. We should have those tomorrow. I'm probably going to move this forward for a work session only tomorrow.
Okay.
But I am going to take some more testimony if people want it. Did you wish to say anything, Senator?
Just
so briefly,
Mr.
Sure. I appreciate you being here, and I truly appreciate both you and I. If there's others that would like to speak, I would love to. It's still open. So, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. Again, I was with the big chief co-chairs, and I'm missing
As you can see, my committee's been decimated by
yeah,
the same group.
Yeah, Representative Jensen said he was it was he and I with our natural resources budget who were corralled for about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure you did get the Dash 6.
We did.
I had discussed them with you this morning,
yep.
And we looked those out, and I think it does solve the problem. Did Marisa James from LC come and testify?
No.
Okay, well, if you need her to put anything on the
at
record.
At the work session, if we need to, we'll do it tomorrow.
Okay, great. So I think we've pretty much covered the concern that you had, and I think I was not here for Ms. Gaines, but I think she commented and responded about some of the testimony yesterday that was a little bit off the mark, shall I say. I have to tell you, I feel a little bit like my character was impugned yesterday, so I'm very uncomfortable with that, those representations. And I will tell you that this is a new emerging industry where you can't go to the phone book and find these people. And when I sent out notice that we were doing a work group in the Capitol, I had asked Ms. Gaines to have meetings with people outside the Capitol. And when I got a report back about some uncomfortableness in one of the meetings, I decided they would now be in the Capitol. And so we had a meeting in the Capitol, and I sent out notice that we would have this meeting, and if any of you, here's the list of participants, if any of you know of anyone who would like to participate, let me know, and I'll decide whether they can participate. I only got one response back, and it was from an industry person, a funeral home industry person, and I said, no, I already have one funeral home person represented, so I don't want to. And I didn't hear anything from these folks that were trying to license, and then when I get into the work group, they said, well, we didn't have time. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I'm pretty inclusive, and we opened this up for lots of conversation. We've been getting a lot of email from out of state, national people who are very agitated about what we're trying to do. I've provided you with a legislative council opinion that shows this is not infringe upon free speech and answers a number of questions that were raised. I think we've done an excellent job of addressing the questions. I think we've done an excellent job of illustrating why we need this legislation to protect consumers. I always like to be prepared in advance instead of waiting for a catastrophic event to happen, such as happened 25 years ago in Lincoln County with Mr. Olmsted. Olmsted, I can't remember his name. It's here in my notes. But, yeah, Olmsted, you know, and that was really inappropriate. And the legislature failed to take action. And then when this occurred and bodies were found buried in places where they shouldn't have been, the legislature came back and took action. So I'm here hoping to take action in advance to provide consumers with confidence that someone in Oregon is watching out for them, because this is certainly a very difficult time for people when their family members pass away. Clearly, we are not trying to limit someone's free speech ability and ability to hold workshops and educational events. That's not what we're talking about here, and I think I've made that clear. And quite frankly, I'm not going to be responding to any more email questions. I'm just not going to do it. So.
Yeah, and that was the question I was going to, since you're here, I was asked, because I agree. I read the bill, and mm-hmm. people who say, well, if I had a workshop to teach about you doing your own,
right.
would that be a problem? I said, I don't see it. It doesn't cover here. If you're not dealing with an individual and a burial, you are not covered. This is about people who work with an individual body, someone who has died, and if you're just giving workshops on how to do your own work, it would not be covered.
That's correct, Mr.
And,
Chair.
And if you chose as an individual to take care of it yourself and file all the paperwork and do that stuff. I mean, you could have someone come in and help you. Your neighbor could come in and comb hair and do all. I mean, you can do that as long as you're the person doing it. It's only when you decide to hire someone to relieve you of the responsibility of doing all that that they would come under this bill, as I understand it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's exactly right. It says very clearly in the bill that if you offer these services for payment, then you must be licensed. If you don't charge a fee, and, you know, there's one of these people who've testified who said, well, I don't charge a fee.
But you
can do it for free without licensure.
But even if I charged a fee for my workshop, and that's all I'm doing, that's still not a problem.
That's education, Mr. Chair. It's not consultations regarding funeral services or final disposition services. So I just don't really understand and of course now we've changed it to consultations directly related to the performance of funeral services or final disposition services. And funeral services and final disposition services are both defined in the bill. So I think we've covered our bases, and you know, I think this is now a case of people who just don't want to be regulated. And I remember when I was a court reporter and we became licensed, and there was a lot of squawking about having to be licensed. But I think it's a good thing, because people need to have an agency to go to when someone doesn't do their job right, if they're hanging out their shingle and doing business in Oregon. And so in this case, we now have the Cemetery Mortuary Board. Maybe they're uncomfortable with that, but that's where we have the death care industry located. And as Ms. Gaines indicated, they are working on a plan to either change the makeup of the board or the entire structure. And these folks have an opportunity to participate if they so choose. And that will be back before you in 2011.
And I did ask Ms. Gaines about my deal, and I told her we would be back here with amendments if, in fact, I felt that the board was just out to get somebody and destroy an industry. And she indicated clearly that that's never been the intention. The intention is to get regulations so that we know what's happening out there, and the consumer actually has better information about what's available and what's there. So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's exactly right. And when I read about these green burials, I was alarmed. You know, it just sounded all kind of strange to me. Just lots of new ways to be buried or end your life. I mean, in terms of cremation, cryogenics, pulverizing, freeze-drying, liquefying. I mean, it's like, whoa, what happened here? So I read about that in the newspaper this summer, and then I contacted Mr. Brenneman, and I hooked up with the Cemetery and Mortuary Board and said, I'd like to do this bill. And Ms. Gaines says, well, we've got a bill that we'd like to introduce cleaning up some other areas of the statute. Can we team up? And I said, certainly. And so that's how my thing here ended up in this bill. It's no conspiracy theory, absolutely not. It's simply working with a state agency to find an effective way to deliver a policy concept, and make sure that you get the information that you need. This board has had problems in the past. I served for two sessions on the education subcommittee, and I have put up with the problems of this board and the executive director, and we finally just told the governor he had to do something about it, and so he did. And so we have a new director. It is the difference between night and day. Ms. Gaines is extremely accessible, articulate, attentive to detail, and you can see the difference in the interaction between the board and the executive director and certainly the legislature. So I don't think people have anything to fear here. It is a very open process. But my bottom line is to make good policy, and if some people get mad in the process, well, I can't help that. We're here to make good policy, not friends. We're here to make good policy for Oregonians.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Nope. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Are there other people who would like to speak? Okay. Come on up.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm definitely not prepared today. I didn't know that this was going to take place, but I feel it's very important to establish the fact that we are not concerned about being regulated. We are very concerned about how and who. Right now, we don't know how they're going to do it.
I agree.
They don't either. So why is this necessary at this time? Why wouldn't it be better to wait until all of that is in place and then come back to you and to us and move forward?
Oh, please state your name for the record. Forgot to
I'm
ask
so
that.
Sorry. Nancy Ward from Sacred Endings.
Thank you.
It's the rush. It's that they don't have a plan. So why would we need to be regulated with no plan in place? Do you know of anyone else that does this? I mean, I'm not familiar with how Salem works, but to me this seems really odd, and it seems disrespectful. And I just can't imagine that it's needed, that a rush is needed. If you were dealing with complaints, if there'd been press, negative press, if the board, even though they don't regulate us, received calls, then it would make sense. Why rush? This is going to go into force in March, in March of next year, and yet we won't have any idea of how we're going to be regulated. So in effect, we're out of business. There's no licensing in place. I just really don't get it. I don't understand why we need this right now.
I'll try to answer that in a second from my perspective, but go ahead.
Sandra Bishop, for the record, representing Sacred Endings and some of the other practitioners. I'd just like to add one thing to the record and also provide a printed copy of my testimony from yesterday. I apologize, I didn't have it yesterday. The one thing that is very alarming about how we're proceeding with this is that this is a very unusually written statute. It seems to be written in the negative. It's what you can't do. So what's very dangerous about passing this bill is that there's no scope of practice. You're delegating or putting that off to a rules process, which is actually allowing, I believe, rules to supersede statute. So it would be wiser and better if some time was taken to come up with an actual scope of practice. If you're going to regulate new practitioners, you don't even have a description in the law of what it is that they can do. You only have negatives. So I would really think that it might be wise for the legislators to slow down and say, look at this during the interim, bring the interested parties together, come up with a distinct scope of practice. And perhaps it's time to open this statute and clean up the whole thing. It's been, you know, added to and put together over a number of decades. So I would just say, you know, that for the record. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Edwards.
Well, actually, it's for anybody in the room. I just thought of it. I was going back through my notes yesterday. The bill adds a third category. It anticipates $80 a year for the license. Is that in the bill, or will that be set by rule? By rule, okay. And I, frankly, I mean, for the record, I feel more comfortable setting that fee by rule than in the statute, because we don't know exactly what the scope is going to be and what the different requirements of the board would be for different types of folks. And so I just That's why I was asking if it's in the statute or the rule.
And I guess what I would say to the questions you had, and I know I don't have to answer them, but from my perspective, because I've thought about this bill a lot, I've talked to a lot of people, I've taken a lot of testimony, and as I said earlier, I think the reason for now is that we have had these hearings, and it has been covered in the news the last few months, and all of that heightens people, and I believe in my heart that everyone who's come and talked to me who is doing this right now are sincere, caring people who want to do the right thing. But there are a whole lot of people out there who are fraudulent and who take advantage of people no matter where it is and what happens. And having been a legislator for a while, you know, I have dealt with an elderly person in Reedsport who took in a person who was on the street who she thought she was being nice to because he was going to help build her stairs. And he did that. And then he said, I can help. I'm a handyman. I'll do these other things. And pretty soon she'd signed over her house because it would be a lot easier for me to get the stuff if I had it. And pretty soon she got an eviction notice from her home. And everything was owned by this other person. And it was done in such a way that there was no way to undo it. I mean, it was really a tragic experience from my perspective. And there are people out there who look for whatever the next advantage is, and there is no worse place, in my opinion, than in this industry for taking care of people at their lowest time in their lives. And those people exist. And once they see that there's an unregulated business opportunity out there, they will come in and start doing it. It isn't the people who have studied and done the things that you have and have cared for their parents and done the other things. It is another group of people who exist in our society. I wish they didn't, but they do. And I think it becomes an obligation of the state and the legislature to figure out how to make that not happen. Number two, when it comes to not being very fast, I think that we've got between now and this bill doesn't implement, so it'll be an unregulated industry continuing until the bill takes effect, which is in
March.
Was it March? And we will have another session between now and March, and for the record, that's why I requested that it not be trying to put people out of business, that we come up with reasonable regulations and rules, and we will have a chance, if that isn't happening, to take action as a legislature when we come back in February. And so I personally wanted to make sure that this happened, that we have someone in charge of doing it that I, as a state, have some regulation over, i.e. the board. I would encourage them to engage in people in the industry to help in writing those rules and understanding the scope and all of that kind of stuff. But to me, this is a process that seems to work now. And I didn't come in believing this is what I, you know, was going to do and why it was going to be. I was open to everybody's suggestions. The senator has been responsive to me when I said, here's some issues that I had. We have amendments today. So I have seen people trying to work to make this better. I am convinced that that's what this is about. So that's why, that's my answer to some of your questions.
Thank you, Chair Roland. I just think that's important. And I definitely hope you're right, because I'm very prejudiced. I really think this is a movement that is just in its fledgling state.
I agree.
And I think that you will see it becoming more and more attractive to people, but only if it is given a chance to work in its original form, which has nothing to do with commercialism.
Right.
It has to do with going back to basics. And if we layer and layer and layer rules and regulations and licensing and barriers to people obtaining this, then you will have defeated what it is you want to do. And I truly believe that what you want to do is correct. I'm just very concerned about the way in which it's going to be handled.
And I would tell you that if it becomes as successful as you think it will be, whether you want to commercialize it or not, there are people out there who will.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
And therefore, it better be regulated. So
you win.
Chair Roland, thank you very much. We really appreciated
and
your
appreciate
patience
you
yesterday
too.
And
yes.
in listening to all
thank
the testimony.
You
thank you very much.
Thank you. Any concerns? We don't have the stuff we need. We will have it by tomorrow. I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 796A, and I am carrying over the work session only to tomorrow. And so hopefully we'll have everything by then. I can't imagine that they won't get it to me by then, but with that, I think we're all done with the stuff we have for today. So we're going to close our rules hearing for today. Thank you very much.
Is this a permanent new home?